Your Money Replay from Money FM 89.3. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
Welcome to Money and Me. I'm Michelle Martin. Our topic today is super interesting. How is fintech disrupting the finance industry and where is it headed? Joining me, a wonderful panel. Kenneth Liu is CEO of Seedly. Welcome back, Kenneth. How's your Wednesday going?
It's been great.
It's been good. Kelvin Lam, we've got two Kelvins today. So this helps listeners identify which Kelvin it is. So tell me, Kelvin Lam, Singapore Country Manager, Utrip Multi currency. Have you been traveling much?
Been traveling a lot of places around Southeast Asia and also worldwide as well.
Yeah, because there's some expansion for
yes,
Utrip, yeah?
Absolutely. So we just do our first market launch outside Singapore yesterday in Thailand. So just fly back from Thailand from our very, very first launch partnership with Kasikorn Bank in Thailand to bring Utrip outside Singapore.
Congratulations. Is that your first outpost?
Yes.
Outside of Singapore?
Yes, correct.
All right, we're keeping our eyes on you. Dhruv Arora is founder and CEO of Syfe. Have I got it right?
You have. Nice to see you again.
Welcome back. So, what's new for Syfe?
Well, quite a few exciting things. We are actually officially today a hybrid advisor. We have officially
hybrid
launched.
Hybrid advisor.
Yes. So, okay. I mean, we are no longer
robo advisors.
A bunch of robots doing chuck, chuck, chuck.
So, we have come to life.
Yeah, I think this was in beta for the last 2 months, but we've built a team and we officially launched today. So all customers, no matter how big or small, will start getting access to free financial advice. And some of the higher value customers will even get financial planning sessions complimentary.
Which means you made some significant hires.
We have. We've just hired a private banker from Goldman Sachs, and he's built an incredible team. And I feel our users will get a chance to meet him very soon as well.
Okay, well, we're going to dive deep into what Syfe can offer in terms of financial advice. Kelvin Teo is co-founder and CEO of Funding Societies, the peer-to-peer lending platform. Kelvin, second Kelvin of the morning. How are you today?
Hi, Misha. I'm great. How are you?
Welcome to Money and Me. I'm very excited to hear about Funding Societies and what's ahead. Okay, well, I'm so excited. I just want to jump into what's ahead. Digital banking license. Okay, wait, we won't go there just yet. But first up, guys, to our topic today, fintech, how is it disrupting finance and what's ahead? Maybe you could talk a little bit about what each of you do and how that is changing options for consumers in this day and age. Dhruv, you want to kick us off?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think our goal from day one has been very simple. We want to bring the best of financial services, especially when it comes to investing and saving, and make it accessible to everyone in a transparent and a low-cost manner. I think with regulatory changes, which have been favorable, as well as with technology advances, everyone's with a smartphone today.
Yeah.
I think we are now able to offer some top-of-the-end, service and advice to all our customers. And that's something that we continue to day in, day out at Syfe.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, it always seems when we talk about disruption that inclusion is the catchphrase, right? So, Kelvin, when it comes to what you're doing, mm-hmm. Funding Societies, peer-to-business lending,
right,
making funding accessible to everybody these days. Share with us a little bit about what you're planning to bring to the industry.
Sure. So basically, we are for your SME peer-to-business lending or SME digital financing platform, currently licensed and operating in Singapore, Indonesia, and Malaysia. And why we have started Funding Societies is to primarily serve the short-term unsecured financing gap that a lot of small, medium businesses face, because it's really hard for them to get short-term unsecured financing from traditional financial institutions. And these loans are typically crowdfunded as a form of alternative investments by individuals and or institutions. So we're really excited that we are actually crossing the $1 billion mark. So we've just given out $1 billion of loans to about 30,000 small, medium businesses across Southeast Asia just this month. And this serves as a form of investment instruments to the public to earn interest income as a form of short-term alternative investments.
So where does the fin in fintech come in what you're doing?
So the fin part really comes in terms of actual credit assessment of these small, medium businesses, because I think fundamentally, even as we use technology and data to enable some of these financial services, I think fintech still cannot escape from the fundamental rules of finance. And therefore, the fin part really comes when in terms of managing the risks of these businesses and managing this the investment risk of these investments for the public.
Absolutely. And the tech part?
So the tech part basically enables two things. Number one is to allow all small, medium businesses to access such financial services digitally, be it mobile, be it web, or like what Drew has mentioned, out of offline channels. And from an investor's perspective, they can actually just apply for an account, invest everything online end-to-end, including signing of electronic signatures as well as investments. And that really gives them convenience so that they don't have to go to a branch to open an account or they don't have to go through manual paper work for this investment. So it's really a click and play, invest and forget kind of concept.
Ease and connectivity.
Yes,
right,
exactly.
Is what the tech is bringing. And would you say UTrip offers that as well? We just had your co-founder on. So welcome to Kelvin. What is UTrip doing to disrupt the financial space?
So we started off with the space that is very close to our users, which is what we call payment. So for the longest time, payment is just about like using your banks, using your credit cards. And, you know, in recent times, over the past 4 or 5 years, people talk about e-wallets. But a lot of the times, e-wallets are only for your local payments. Think about like you want to pay in your hawker center and many other places. UTrip, what we do is we want to bring the e-wallet, we want to bring the payment experience overseas for travelers. So what we are disrupting really is we have the space about payment for so long here in Singapore, but we want to add the flavors about multi-currency. We want to add the flavors about how you can pay smarter when you're paying overseas. And that's why what we do in UTrip is to give users an option to pay with the best currency rate with no fees when you're going overseas.
Kenneth, I'm not letting you off the hook for this, even though you've been to, I think, about 7 shows so far.
Yeah, I was just listening in, fly on the wall, kind of.
How is really disrupting the space?
So actually, this is quite representative of what the fintech space looks like. And in fact, you can find these same companies and these industries on the Sidley platform.
Yeah.
So what we think of ourselves is like a trip advisor of personal finance. People come to the platform to discover user-generated reviews, questions and answers about these guys.
Yeah.
Right? So everything from the operations to the history of the companies to something even very small like a promo code. I think you can find it on the Sidley platform as well.
Right. So you're like
customers.
The Wikipedia so people can understand SYFE and UTrip and peer-to-peer lending platform funding societies, right? So when it comes to the big challenges ahead, I think whenever we have a fintech on the program, people call through or they WhatsApp questions to do with, you know, there's this basic worry and worry that one day you're just going to disappear off the web and then what happens? So how do you tackle this question of trust, each of you?
I think, say, for example, for us in UTrip, partnership being one key focus that we have. In Singapore, we partner with EaseLink when we're launching a product. Until now, we're still having a very strong partnership with EaseLink. When we launched yesterday in Thailand, we partnered with Kasikorn Bank, which is like one of the largest banks in Thailand as well. So what we bring in, we know where we place. We want to bring in innovation. At the same time, we want to blend in the trust element inside. So that's why that is one part of it. At the same time, say, in Singapore, we also focus on the regulatory front. So, say, for example, we recently got our remittance license with MAS, officially approved by the regulators. Mm. And we also, over time, just give the confidence to the users that, hey, you know, we as a startup, as a fintech, as much as you may seem to think that we are newer, but we are also actively engaging regulators and also local players to bring in the trust together and to bring in the innovations to users.
Anybody else want to take the trust issue with fintech?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I mean, obviously, I think one part of it also becomes about education, like constantly educating users, whether it's through seminars, whether it's through online platforms. But just to touch up on the regulation part, right, I think we've spoken about, you know, MS being a very forward-looking regulator. So I think in our case, for example, right, we are one of the very few CMS license holders. So any investments which happen, which customers actually send, they get sent to a trust account, which is segregated from all our finances and, you know, kept, you know, in a separate account altogether. So, you know, God forbid something goes wrong to us, the customer assets are still safe. But then coming back to my earlier point, you know, this is a constant education. So the more savvy customers will probably, you know, dive further on platforms like Sidley and ask such questions.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I think this is a constant education. But I think, as I said, it's a blend of, you know, regulation actually putting the bells and whistles in place and, you know, customers actually making the effort to understand that.
And also people like you on the forefront with constant transparency and openness, I suppose.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I think we pride ourselves in transparency, and I think, you know, as I said, we just like keep everything open. And I think, you know, I think everyone out here stands for what they've built, right? And we are trying to disrupt an industry which has largely been clouded and with a lot of like hidden fees and hidden charges.
Yes.
And a lot of unknowns. So that's what we're fighting.
And I think, like, I want to echo the point from Drew just now. It's like, I think the one single currency in trust nowadays for fintechs is actually not your government saying, but it's actually the reviews. So I think like what Kenneth Vossidley is doing to us, and I'm sure to all of us here in the fintech, the reviews is actually the most important part. So and that's why the beauty of the community is like people are talkative. There's a community there to share about the experience. Yeah. And I think that's where the trust is coming from on top of all the partnerships and things.
To a large extent, out of the control of each of the fintechs changing the space, so to speak. That's the power of the reviews, right?
And also I think people are smart to sort of compare. So they will look at the industries respectively, and if they are interested in it, there are different players in an industry. So they will use both quantitative and qualitative. So qualitative would be reviews, right?
Yeah.
Quantitative would be who's the management team, how's my money being stored, what's the licenses that this company has. So I think it's a whole mix of all this before actually putting that first deposit into either a hybrid advisor or multi-currency or even funding societies. Because I think for funding societies, P2P lending was really hot. And I think right now it's still quite hot for an alternative investment for most working adults, I must say. Because when they hear about it, it makes sense as a concept. And then there's a platform that you can actually put in your money to get 10%, 11%, 12% returns.
Yeah, like people listening to this show might be wondering, you know, what do I invest in fintech category? Should I be looking at the financial planning sector, the insurance sector, the money transfer and payment sector? What should I be putting my money in as well? So would they be able to come to Seedly to figure all that out?
Yeah, so I think it's sort of different. You maybe can't invest directly in their companies, but what you can do is to invest through their companies.
Through their companies. But, you know, to understand the different sectors and what...
Yes, definitely. So, for example, YouTrip is more of savings, so it's cost savings. But I think for SIFE and funding societies, it's more of returns. So, depends what you're looking for, really.
Okay. Let's talk about developments ahead. So we know how you're changing the landscape currently, but what is in store? And maybe you can give us a sense, Kelvin, of funding societies and what's ahead. Are you looking at a digital banking license?
So the whole fintech industry is actually at a pretty interesting inflection point whereby the overall industry is maturing. So I think the earliest fintech companies started about 3-4 years ago, and now a lot of them are coming of age, and that you start seeing market leaders, and I think that's also the ones that have established sufficient trust over the course of time. And we were very fortunate to be among the earliest winner of the MES Fintech Award in 2016, on top of being licensed in all three countries that we're currently operating in: Singapore, Indonesia, and Malaysia. And as part of the whole evolution, we have been actually engaging the regulators in terms of more advanced license. And one of the licenses that that we have been preparing for quite a few months is basically the wholesale digital bank license, which MES has announced in middle of this year, and with a deadline of application at the end of this year. So it's something that we see as mission critical for us to really serve our stakeholders in a much better way. So really offering a much bigger suite of financial services to small, medium enterprises, which are frequently talked about by existing institutions, but not necessarily frequently served by the existing financial institutions. And
so
on the flip side,
a wholesale banking license would allow you to expand your footprint and reach out to more SMEs, or are you also looking at the personal financing space?
So I think there are two parts to it. I think from the business side, it allows us to offer more types of financial services to the businesses. But on the flip side, because it is it's a wholesale license, we actually are not allowed to serve non-retail customers. But it does allow us to actually dive deeper into other related investment areas like wealth management. And so this is something that we are actively looking at. I've been preparing for quite some time so that we can actually serve our stakeholders a lot better.
Wow, exciting news. We're going to keep a lookout for how funding societies does that. Yes, Kenneth?
I have a question for him.
Oh, yes.
So I'm curious as well, like, how does it change what you're doing right now? Because I think what you're doing right now from a layperson, retail consumer, feels like you're sort of operating already as a bank. Like, how does getting the wholesale digital banking license
if you
change?
Get it.
Yeah. Or rather, at least we believe when we get it, but rather...
when you get it, yeah.
I think currently we are the... the biggest, not only we are the biggest fintech SME fintech lender, but also we currently have the biggest product suite. So I think the most common SME offerings that most of the fintech lenders are offering is really invoice financing or accounts receivable financing, because A, is not regulated, and B, is in all candor the easiest to offer. Yeah. I think we have gone above and beyond to offer not just invoice financing, but also more sophisticated factoring lines, supply chain financing, term loans, micro loans, but for both the traditional SMEs, so SMEs that are still fairly offline, as well as the digital economy SMEs, so the SMEs that are already online. I think what Wholesale Digital Bank License allows us to do is really take that step further. There's a whole element about credibility and awareness, whereby I think even with all the market awareness, license, awards, partnerships that we have built up, most of the SMEs or even other broader stakeholder public would always think that, hey, if I need a loan, I go to a bank.
Yep.
So I think that really helps in terms of credibility and awareness. But also on top of that, the fact that we can actually bundle up bank accounts for these SMEs, as well as credit cards and other offerings that in a very integrated fashion, and help these SMEs to actually expand outside of Singapore, leveraging our footprint in Indonesia, Malaysia, and very soon Thailand and Vietnam, actually helps us to really grow the SME segment within Pro, which is one of the biggest stakeholders, and contribute more than half of the GDP as well as 2/3 of the employment. So hopefully with that, we can actually help the SMEs to grow more, and also in conjunction leverage on our existing crowdfunding or our capital market services license to offer more alternative investments to the consumers as well.
Absolutely. Fine. Fantastic. I demand a 3-hour special. Always funding societies. Kelvin
Teo. Yes, game on. Accepted.
Co-founder and CEO there of Funding Societies, Kelvin Teo, responding to a great question from Kenneth Liu, CEO of Seedly. Two Kelvins in the studio. The other one is from Utrip, Dhruv Arora, founder and CEO of Syfe, their robo-advisors, now hybrid advisors. Okay, guys, a general question for all of you to weigh in on. What do you see changing when it comes to the fintech landscape in Singapore in the next 5 years?
Two main trends we see here. First off is a multi-currency market. Utrip started last year. We were the only one in the multi-currency space. This year, end of 2019, we have a lot more foreign and local players coming in into foreign, the multi-currency payment as well. So it shows that this market has a lot of potentials. And I think the other trend is also we see a lot more bigger conglomerates, startups that sort of had this lateral movement to step into fintech. Like the e-commerce that you think about, they having a fintech footprint here in a space. We think about the Grabs, they also having sort of the fintech footprint as well. So how we look at it is the fintech side of things is no longer looking for financial service just based on your income bracket, but it's also about your behavior. If you're right, if you like to take ride sharing, that's why Grab is creating sort of like the financial service for you. If you like e-commerce, that's why there's many other e-commerce players giving the financial service for you. And if you like travelers, for us like Utrip, then we're creating the financial experience for you as a traveler for the behavior that you have as a traveler.
Great point. Mm-hmm. Anybody else want to weigh in on the major disruptions you see ahead?
So this is Calvin from Finding Societies. I think we don't see it as disrupting the status quo, but rather as the fintech companies that have started about 3-4 years ago start maturing, I do see that we bring in a very unique and strong value proposition to complement existing financial institutions. The truth is that when we've initiated partnerships with financial institutions a few years back, we didn't have that much to offer because we are still young, we're still developing our capabilities and networks and so forth, right? But as we grow bigger, we've identify a niche that is currently underserved. And I think that by working together with existing financial institutions, we can actually offer a more holistic, wholesome product offerings to SMEs as well as consumers. And I think that partnership will gradually become more meaningful and also, kind of more sustainable moving forward.
Okay. Drew?
Yeah, I think, seeing the other side of it, even we've seen this happen. I think as consumers get more aware, I think the real change will happen when the adoption starts coming in. And I think to the youth of Kelvin's first point was that, you know, I think any company which has a distribution network, you know, like the ride hailing or the e-commerce will try to leverage off and get on the, you know, finance platform. It's yet to see if they really succeed. In fact, if you look at global trends, some of them actually have struggled because if you go to a place to, you know, buy things, you might not want to trust them with your money. You know, there's a bit of a psychology thing. So we'll see how that evolves. But I think the most important evolution I see over the next 5 years is I think the customer maturing. And I think the customers actually being more open to start using platforms which are not like the, you know, existing bigger financial institutions.
Yeah, that's Kenneth's ambit, right?
Yes. Where the media guys, you know, get
educating.
Educating.
Reaching
educating.
Out to the public.
Very important. Yeah.
What do you see as the big change ahead?
I think one thing that we sort of didn't really cover is more on like how we can look at China as an example of how they are at least 5 years ahead of us in terms of the Alipays, the WeChat Pays. And I think when you look back at Southeast Asia, in Singapore specifically, like the payments thing is really taking off. You have GrabPay, you have all the other PayLahs, you know, the traditional banks versus the new tech startups that's coming up. And I think what we are seeing is that, I think that's what Kelvin from Utrip shared, is that all these Shopees, the Razors, all these guys are having a lot of user base, so they already have the adoption piece sort of settled.
Yep.
It's more of what innovations they come up and to build on top of their existing ecosystems that would sort of take shape. And I think something most unique and I think interesting in personal finance is that for most of these big companies, their end state is always about money. For some reason. So it's always about getting control of the user's financial life. Everything is always pointing
there. I think part of the problem people on the consumer side feel is, what are you? It's hard to identify. What are you? Are you an e-commerce store? But all of a sudden, you're tying up with a bank and you're offering a debit card. So are you in the personal finance space?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you see them all pretty much offering services to do with finance and tailored around behavior, as Kelvin from Utrip talked
about.
That's
a unique way to think of it.
Actually, I do think that China would be good as a good reference point, but I think that Southeast Asia or Singapore in particular will probably evolve in a different and better way because of hindsight benefits. So I think two key point observations. I think number one was that when we talk about peer-to-peer lending, I think everyone would reference about how the whole peer-to-peer lending industry blew up in China and think that, hey, this is a fundamentally bad industry. But actually, I do think that because it blew up in China, it actually gives a good warning sign to regulators in Southeast Asia. And Southeast Asian regulators have proactively managed and regulated the industry and enable it to grow in a much more healthy and sustainable way. And I think another observation is that while a lot of these companies, like what Kenneth said, start offering full integrated services in China, but what the one downside of that trend is that it's really the formation of digital empires, which basically controls all facets of your life and have access to all facets of data, which I think a lot of countries and states are becoming increasingly wary and concerned about. And that actually gives smaller but more sophisticated countries like Singapore a good reference point to consider how to manage such growth of industries to avoid similar mistakes to be made.
Thank you very much. You just gave me the title for my next show, Digital Empires. Great talking to all of you. We're fresh out of time. Kenneth Liu is CEO of Seedly. Kelvin Lam is from Utrip, where he's Singapore Country Manager. Dhruv Arora is founder and CEO of Syfe. And Kelvin Teo is co-founder and CEO of Funding Societies. Gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.